I'm sure many of us know someone, if not you, who's felt uncomfortable talking about religion and money or just have feelings of shame or guilt about it. Welcome to Yahweh's Money, a podcast where we discuss the crossroads or intersections of religion and money. We're going to go deep into topics like tithing and saving and debt and so much more from the religious view. I'm your host, Shay Cook, CEO and founder of Crusaders for Change, LLC, and our co-host is Vanessa McNally, one of our financial counselor coach educators. Let's talk about God and money. Let's face it, we've all had those moments where our wallets played a prank on us. At some point in our lives, most of us have had foolish money mistakes. Today, Vanessa and I will be talking about some of the financial blunders that make us cringe, laugh, and ultimately learn. Wow, Vanessa.
I know. And I think, unfortunately, we have a lot of these stories.
But guess what? That's human nature. You're going to mess up and it's okay. How many times have I said we got to make making mistakes, messing up, just doing crazy stuff sexy because you're going to learn from it. It challenges you. It makes you change. It makes you a better person. So
really
there's nothing wrong with making financial blunders as long as you learn from them, right?
So exactly.
So Proverbs 27:23 tells us, know well the condition of your flocks and give attention to your herds. So basically be vigilant over your finances, people. You got to know what's going on in the herd.
You do. And honestly, I mean, how much more clear can we be? I mean, God is telling us right there, you know, just know your stuff and know what you're doing. So, and I think that leads to a lot of, you know, these mistakes that we make and these regretful purchases that we make too. So if we learn from these things, hopefully, you know, we're going to be a little better at, you know, being a Proverbs person this week versus a Proverbs woman. You know, I don't know. I feel like some of these purchases that we make, we do them because of others. We do them to fit in. A lot of them is just because we feel like we're not good enough to be, you know, one of the numbers. But like when we buy things, what's one of those big purchases that a lot of people buy often and spend way too much on? First thing that comes to my head, electronics.
Well, technology is taking over the world. So, you know, everybody's got to have the big TV, the newest video equipment. Yeah. I mean, phone. I mean, the list goes on, right? Mm-hmm. Shoes is beyond the electronics. But yeah, I mean, wow, everybody. But there are technically, there's shoes that have electronics built into it. It's crazy.
Yeah. You know, and we buy these things to fit in or to be part of a clique, and we don't even really get to enjoy them a lot of times. You know, I know some people buy shoes and they collect them and they have them sitting on their walls and they don't even really get to enjoy that purchase that they made. They bought it to impress people or, like I said, to be part of that social group or whatever that might be. You know, and I know a lot of times we buy things and we don't need a new one. We buy them and we add more to the collection. So it's not even a replacement for some of these things. But with electronics, I think that's the big one that we buy. You know, I mean, heck, how often do new phones come out?
I know, every year.
Right? Yeah. And I know you and I, we don't do that like a lot of people do.
Not at all.
But yeah. You know, people are always on the hook for these things and they're making payments on these things. And it's like, why are we doing that? What do we get from that?
What do you get from that? And I don't want to shame anybody. If that's your thing, if you're a collector, I personally don't collect anything. The only thing I may collect is I've been a collector of like purses back in the day and some clothes and some dress shoes, never tennis shoes and books. I'm always buying books that I never read, or I read a little bit of it and then I'm like, why did I buy this book? But other than that, I don't. My husband always says he collects. He's the big bourbon whiskey guy now in the Jordans, and he wears all his Jordans. You know, there's so many, you can't wear them all the time. I was like, oh my God. But you know, there's things he buys, I'm just gonna put him on blast, like underwear. Like, dude, how much underwear you need? Like, I don't understand. Yeah. But I think that comes back from something in childhood where he didn't have, he had holy underwear, he had something going on, and mom couldn't afford to buy him underwear, whatever the situation might have been. You know, he feels like he's got to have so much in case, you know. And so there's some like stuff from childhood that comes into play later in life. But then, like you said, there's those trends that, or people just trying to keep up with whoever, the Kardashians, Carters, you know, whoever. Yeah. And it's like, really, why? Why are we having all of this stuff. Exactly. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. One of my mom's really good friends, she always had a good philosophy with this. Her idea was always, you know, you may need new, but you don't need more.
I love that.
And it was such a great thing. So even, you know, little things like buying, you know, bra and panties, you know, she would always replace her old ones. Exactly. But she would never, you know, accumulate more. So she always had enough and she always had, you know, newer things. But with everything, she didn't need more. It's like, how many pairs of, gosh, how many pairs of blue jeans can a person wear? You know? So it's like, you may need new, but you don't need more. So that's something I'm trying to be better at. I'm not very good at it yet. I do like to shop. But, you know, it's something to kind of use in our everyday life. You may need new, but you don't need more. Because I think a lot of us, we do have enough. We do have enough. So it's just replacing. And then if we have those things and we can donate to others who don't have.
I was thinking the same thing. Exactly. Right?
Yeah. So we can have some good come out of this too. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, you know, we'll buy something and we regret it almost as soon as we get it home. And that's something that we really have to work on and maybe talk through with these purchases too. And that happens a lot with impulse buys, especially.
It really does. You're right. Yeah. I've had some major impulse buys. I think the biggest one was a motorcycle. So, oh my God. And then, oh God, I was just going along with my brother and my, my husband who were talking about getting a license. And I told this story at one of our Tickle My Money Boom events before, but you know, just like, you know, wait a minute, these men can ride a motorcycle. And I love speed. I back in the day, I love like racing my cars and stuff like that. I just love speed. I mean, at one time I thought I was going to die in a car accident because I was speeding so much because I just loved and I had this need for speed. Like I was one of those. So our motorcycle just made sense. And so when they started talking about it, I'm like, oh, I want to get a motorcycle. And I always have to put out there that they had to test several times. I got my license on the first try. And so, but we bought these two sports bikes and I'm talking $10,000-$15,000 each. We bought them with a loan, but we paid them off like within 5-6 months. But the thing is, we're sitting in our garage for years and we're not even using them. And I was like, oh my God. And every time I would go out in the garage, I'm like, oh my God, it was like this big old machine sitting in there, beautiful Hondas. Like we had a 250 and a 600, beautiful machines. But I'm like, I'm not using these. Cause after a while, my husband with the back and stuff, he couldn't ride them. But then also it's like, I could die.
True.
As I get older, it's like I'm more risk averse. And I'm like, if I get hit in a car, it's very different than if I get hit in a motorcycle.
Definitely.
So, you know, I started having this like, I'm like, no. And I still want to be able to ride again and maybe just get like a cruiser next time. But that was the biggest impulse buy. And it ate at me. And it was like, and seeing it every day, sometimes I didn't even want to go in my garage because I was like, I would shame myself. Like, what were you thinking? Like, it was cool while it lasted, but thank God we were able to sell it and we gave my dad one. So it was like, it wasn't all lost, but it was just like, oh my God, you know, and I know that's like first world problems, people. I understand that, you know, being able to buy a motorcycle, not many people can do that. So, but I know people have impulse buys around smaller items, obviously, you know.
Yeah. You know, with my impulse buys, one of my big things is makeup. I buy a lot of makeup just to try things and see if they actually work, which is a smaller purchase, but you know, that adds up over time. And it's like, nobody needs like 27 foundations. Nobody needs that, especially when they're not the right shade or whatever that you're going to wear.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, there's all these little things that do add up. And with that, it's like, okay, you know, how many of this do I need? How many of that do I need? And that's how people become hoarders, you know, they start buying all these things, they start keeping them. And then I think my other impulse is I travel a lot. Travel is something I really love. And I know when my mom was alive, she helped me with this impulse purchase. We would talk on the phone and we would always try to plan something to look forward to. And I would call her and my expectation was she would kind of bring me back down to earth and talk me out of things, but she would always talk me into things. So, you know, so I would call and be like, oh my gosh, I found this deal. do you want to go to, you know, do you want to go on a cruise this, you know, next month? And she'd be like, yes, here's my credit card. Let's go. and it was just always like a yes, always a yes, mm-hmm. which, you know, some impulse buys are good, but yeah. really it's hard to make these decisions when you feel like you're in this moment and you have to make that decision right then and there.
The FOMO is real.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And there is nothing wrong with taking a second, stepping back, and just saying, is this the right thing? Mm-hmm. But we just tend to not do that. We tend to not do that.
That's so true. And also overanalyze purchase. So I'm an extremist. So I either go all in or all the way like, mm-hmm. I'll think like, oh, if I need a computer, I will wait till that thing is about, can't start before I buy another one. My husband's like, you've known for years that this computer needed to be replaced. I'm like, mm-hmm. that's why probably why it took mm-hmm. me. You know, I went from the 8 to the 14 on the iPhone because I'm like, why am I going to buy 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 exactly. when my phone is still working? I'm not doing that. I mean, and I know people that do it every year because they want the and whatever, but I am just not that person. So I overanalyze too much. Mm-hmm. And I think I kind of overanalyzed the motorcycles, but I was also in the moment. We were making good money and we had, you know, the savings and all that. So financially, we were set. But then I was like, ugh, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I think my impulse buys are Target and Walmart.
I cannot go into those places
without spending $100. It's like Shay, mm-hmm. And then I think I told you and TJ, I went in there. I stopped going for like 4 months, and then I spent $400, and I was like, I just made up for the 4 months I didn't go. I just really am like, I don't even know if it's an addiction or an impulse. I don't know what Target and Walmart is, but it's just,
And, you know, and that's something too. When I go to those places and you're at checkout and they're like, oh, did you find everything you need? And my answer is always like, I didn't need anything. You know, I came in and I found things I wanted, but yes, I did find everything I needed and wanted today.
I always say I found more than, found more than I needed.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like having the ability to just kind of know ourselves, know our limitations, know our weaknesses. And kind of stepping back because we do have these impulse purchases. And then a lot of times we buy really expensive things when we don't need to. So, you know, so it's like instead of buying a good pair of tennis shoes, we buy the best pair of tennis shoes that cost 4 or 5 times what the other ones would do. And the other ones would work just fine. But a lot of times I think that equates to who we're hanging out with and what our friends have. And what we're seeing constantly.
Yeah. I know. I was thinking, can I relate? Because so we were in Turkey. I hung out with a woman, a military spouse. And her husband was retired Air Force, but also a GS-14 or 15. So they had the bigger house on the base. They had all this beautiful furniture. And then even my boss at the time, I'll never forget, Janet is her name. She had just this beautiful house. She was like a GS-14, 13 or 14. So she had the bigger house on the base as well, all this beautiful furniture. So hanging out with her, and I think the other lady was named Jody, and we would go to all the Turkish markets and buy furniture. And I actually went in not even planning and came out with like a $3,000 bedroom set.
I've been there, Shay. I understand.
And having to tell my husband that, oh yeah, by the way, I just bought the whole bed. And you see my Turkish bed. It's huge with the dresser and the side table. I mean, nightstands. Like I went the whole thing, not even planning it. And they each bought the same set themselves, Jody and Jen. So it was hilarious. And then it didn't even, because they had the bigger house on the base because you're a GS-12 or 13 or above, you get a bigger house. But my husband was only an E4 at the time, E4, E5. So like we had a small house. We had a 900 square foot little duplex. Right. And we couldn't even put the bed in the bedroom. It's because these people, I was a GS-9 at the time and I'm hanging out with 14s. Anybody knows about the government? That's the whatever it is, the what is not yeah. the rank.
You
but
can
the
only
grade,
go to a
system.
15. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can go to an SES, a senior executive service. Mm-hmm. But yeah, 15 mm-hmm. is a higher in a grade. And so, yeah, I was on the lower end and they were in a higher. They were making way more money than me, had more experience in the government. And I'm sitting here hanging around them trying to buy all these bedroom sets. Thank God I was able to pay it off. But it was just like, man, so I guess I have been under influence of hanging around people that make more
Definitely.
Money. I just thought about that in that moment.
Yeah, so. You know, and I think we can have the reverse effect with this too. If we hang out with people who are very money conscious, then it helps us to not buy those really expensive things or things we can't afford or things we can't need or don't need to. And I think it works both ways. So if we surround ourselves with the right people, we're going to make better purchases and we're going to be better stewards of our money because we're really going to think things through. And you think about that purchase that you made. If you would have gone home first, looked at your bedroom and thought, oh, wait a minute, I don't even know. Like, will that even fit? Should I measure first?
Took some measurements. Yeah, exactly.
Right. But, you know, I've done that too, Shay, because especially with military housing, you have no idea where you're going to be or what, you know, type of house you're going to be in. So, you know, you move often, you do these things, and when you buy big things, a lot of times they're just not going to work. So taking a second and just making sure and just double checking things is always a good idea, even though I'm really bad at it. So,
well, I do it now. I still, that was 17, 18 years ago. I still have that bedroom set. I look at it as my English version of like the bedroom set that goes in a castle that stays there forever.
And
you just replenish it. You just, you know, do the work to keep it up. And I'm never going to probably ever replace that thing. So well,
then it was a good purchase, I think.
So it was in hindsight. But at the time, it was like, you ain't making this kind of money. What are you doing? So, and then the thing is super heavy because it's real wood. And so trying to transport it up and down the stairs, it literally needs like three strong men, including my husband, to do that. So, but that states the quality is good, which is great. Mm-hmm. So paying for quality, which we don't even really discuss here, is sometimes thinking about that purchase and making sure you get good quality, sustainable furniture, which I know is a big thing because they're talking about like the Wayfairs and IKEAs, which I love still, but sometimes they have unsustainable furniture for a reason. Right. So you have to continue to buy, but you have to, you know, so that's another episode of talking about how to be buy sustainable stuff. But, you know, it's but it's something to consider. The quality matters. If you're paying for quality, I ain't mad at you because that stuff's going to last. So,
Yep. And I think sometimes we forget that it's okay to buy nice things and have nice things if you can afford them.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
the kicker. You have to be able to afford them and you have to realize that everything you have can't be amazing and wonderful because we all have budgets. But, you know, you pick and choose those things that matter to you. And that's where you spend your bulk of your money on things that really matter to you.
And then that goes into what about having enough to save for retire, right? Thinking about the future, I think it's probably more appropriate is like, you know, you're buying all this quality stuff, but are you going to be able to go on that vacation you want to go on in 10 years? Are you going to be able to just, you know, leave your job if that's your choice? Retirement looks very different for a lot of people is what I learned. So as an entrepreneur, I realize I hope that this business will continue, even if I'm just sitting on a beach somewhere, you know, getting lit and then people are still making money. That's my goal. You know what I'm saying? So like just being able to chill out and be like, Crusades Jane's still making money, but that's my retirement plan. But, you know, some people just want to just quit work altogether and chill out. So are you thinking about that? Or are you planning to work until you die? You know?
Yep. And that is an awful place to be in. And I know our lives change as, you know, as we grow older and the plans that we made sometimes don't always come into fruition. So it's like we planned on, you know, retiring with our spouse and, you know, RVing across America or whatever that might be. But you might find yourself in a place where you're divorced or you're widowed or, you know, you have a child at home that depends on you for one reason or another, and you can't do those things you planned on. So it's always a good idea to have backup plans or contingency plans, that type of thing. But I could not imagine knowing that I could never quit working in the same capacity. Now, moving over to like a part-time job or something more enjoyable, that's great. And I think that does keep you young longer. But having to work until you die because of your failure to plan, I don't know what that looks like, because in my mind, these things are so important and we really have to make sure that we take care of ourselves because nobody else is going to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, and if you're working on sin in place and it's not work, you know, people say if you love it, it's not worked. And that's right. different. But if right. it's like you're struggling to get up and the stress that comes with it, who wants to do that until mm-hmm. they die? Like, yeah. that's not cool. And even mm-hmm. watching other friends and family retire and enjoy their lives, you on the sidelines and they're like, oh, man, yeah. I'm 65, 70. And my family and friends have been retired since, you know, 60. And yeah. I'm still working. That's not. And you can't even go on the trips because you're working. You know, whatever, you know, everybody's situation is different again. Yeah. And but who wants to do that? Right.
No, I mean, nobody that I know. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's super hard too, because you see the things you're missing out on. And mm-hmm. I think that does bring about like this sense of not belonging too, because you miss out on so much. So you see everybody else having these amazing times and you don't know the sacrifice that was put into that earlier on. And I think exactly. that's a lot of times we don't talk about that sacrifice portion.
We
but
don't.
You do sacrifice early on so that you can have later.
Exactly.
And it's okay to enjoy today and plan for tomorrow too. But you do have to sacrifice something so you can be in that position and retire. And, you know, sometimes things happen that are, you know, unforeseen, like somebody gets sick or, like I said, you know, you get a divorce. I mean, gosh, with my ex-husband, we planned on using his money for retirement because he was military and they still got a pension and all those fun things. So that was my retirement plan. And I didn't have a contingency plan. So when we weren't together anymore, I was like, oh my gosh, what did I do? What did I do? I put my faith in someone else, and you can't do that.
You know, and God says in the word, or in the word says, Proverbs 21:5 says, good planning and hard work leads to prosperity, but hasty shortcuts lead to poverty. So, you know, completion of your work is important, but it's also like you got, I mean, just moving forward and doing the planning and the hard work is what gets you to that accomplishment, right?
It so really does, yeah. Mm. And, you know, being able to plan, I know some of us, we love planning. And that's one of my things. I love to plan. Yeah. Planning is fun to me. But when you don't love to plan and it's something that stresses you out, you know, find somebody that does love that and do it together and, you know, lean on each other with that. Exactly. You know, especially if you're doing it, you know, in a godly way and having that as kind of the backbone of what you're doing and saving for is always having God there. And I think that's going to help us with our patience and making better decisions. And all of those things will kind of align when we do it in a way that would be pleasing to God.
Exactly.
So, yeah. You know, and then we think about all these things too. And we think about getting to that point where, you know, you may have to borrow money from people with all these faux pas. And I've never really been in that situation, thank goodness, where I've had to ask friends or family for money because I couldn't make it through the month. And I've been on the other end of that.
Yeah, we're the lenders in the family.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's usually the more responsible people who do save. And
yeah,
plan.
Vanessa and I are the lenders, and we're not trying to say we all that because we never had to borrow money. It's just that God has blessed us to be the lenders, but also it's kind of a curse too.
Exactly. You know, and I can't imagine the shame and embarrassment that comes with all of that too, and feeling like you have to ask. You know, and I don't know that feeling, because thankfully I've tried to make good decisions, and you know, there's always bad things that happen, but at the same time, I think sometimes we get stubborn and we're not going to ask either because we have pride.
That's very true. That's probably why I never ask, is because I'm stubborn and I'll be like, I'll just go without.
Exactly.
And that's not bad either. I'm just, I will sacrifice and discipline myself to a point where, yeah, I probably should have asked for money for food or clothes, but hey, it's not like I didn't have any clothes and I just chose to eat really cheap food or just, you know, whatever, because I wasn't going to call my family. But on the shame and embarrassment side for the people that have to borrow, that has messed up relationships in people's families, including mine, where my siblings and my parents have not talked to me or whatever because of the shame they felt for asking me for money. Exactly. It wasn't me making them feel a certain way. It was them making themselves feel a certain way. So then they want to cut themselves off from me because they can't see Shay because I owe them money. Well, hey, I ain't, you know, most time when I give money, I give a gift because I know I ain't going to never see it back. So, you know, that, but that shame and embarrassment is real.
It really is. I know I've been going through that too with a family member. And it's like, you know, I will call and I will text and I reach out because on my end, it is what it is. They lost their job and they're going through a hard time. And I just want to make sure they're okay. But I think they're so embarrassed and they're so worried that they can't repay me that they've just cut contact. And to me, it has nothing to do with the money aspect, even though on their end it does. I just want to make sure that they're okay. That's the big part of this. So it really can be isolating when you find yourself in that position too.
Wow. Any final thoughts?
You know, I just think when it comes down to it, you know, it's okay to have nice things. It's okay to want more. But I think we just need to take a second and step back and see, do we really need it? Can we afford it? What type of joy is this going to bring us at all? And just make smart decisions with our money. I think that's really all it comes down to. We're always going to mess up, but as long as we can learn and we can make smart decisions, it's a win.
Amen. And seek guidance from God, from your own expertise. Dig back in your history and say, how did I get through this or in the past? And seek guidance from Crusaders for Change or a financial professional to help you with those finances. But I say always start with God. So thank you for joining us today for another great episode. And remember, it's always better Yahweh's way. Thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into the crossroads of religion and money. Also, we would love to hear your feedback on today's episode, so please leave us a review or just tell us what's on your mind. And remember to follow our podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions of topics for us to discuss, please email us at yahweh@crusaders4change.org. To hear all of Yahweh's Money latest episodes, please visit us at www.crusaders4change.org or wherever podcasts are found. God bless.